to the book of Exodus, chapter 20. And in our studies of late, we have been seeking to understand God's wonderful person for the better. And in doing so, we do that by way of the names that he uses. And remember, a name is not for the person. The name is for people to know the person. Different. So God's names are for us to know and to understand. Now, in the light of that, as we've gone through them in steps progressively, and each time God gives an understanding of his name, then the occasion, on the occasion that is helpful each time, so that the name is relevant, practical, and very helpful to the believers at that time, and thus to our time. So now, if I may, adding to that, in Exodus chapter 20, you'll remember the Ten Commandments. And in the light of that, God adds in verse 24. I'll read verse 23 for a little better context. You shall not make with me gods of silver, neither shall ye make any gods of gold. An altar of earth thou shalt make unto me, and thou shalt sacrifice thereon thy burnt offerings, thy peace offerings, thy sheep, thine oxen, in all places where I record my name. I will come unto thee and will bless thee. So you cannot have anything man-made originating for the altar, as it were. The altars in the temple and in the tabernacle were God's design. They weren't man conjured up an altar, like they brought down an altar from Damascus. And that was deadly for the Israelites. They brought another altar down, a man-designed altar. So now, every place, you have to use dirt, as it were in this case, and if you're going to use the earth, the natural earth, to offer your sacrifices. And where you do that, in the end of verse 21, in all places where I record, and the word record has to do with cause, it's causative, cause to make, to be remembered my name. Wherever my name is caused to be remembered, wherever I make my name caused to be remembered, when in that place I will come unto thee where my name is, and I will bless thee. So that's the arrangement, honor God rightly, and God will present himself and bless, not curse, bless. So now, having said that, over if you would to Deuteronomy, and in chapter 12. And you would remember in Deuteronomy chapter 12, they're going to go in, cross the Jordan, and ultimately they'll have the temple, the tabernacle, it'll be in Shiloh, and then later in Jerusalem. Now, but before that, God gives instructions, and they're repeated. We won't look at all, but just enough to get the thought. In Deuteronomy chapter 12, and in verse 5, but unto the place which the Lord your God shall choose, choose out of all your tribes to put his name there, even unto his habitation shall ye seek, thither thou shalt come. Thou shalt come. So wherever I put my name, I'm going to choose the place among all in the Palestine, among all the tribes. I'm going to choose the place. You aren't going to choose the place. I'm going to choose the place. And if you slide down, if you like, in verse 11, then there shall be a place which the Lord your God shall choose to cause his name to dwell there. So the place has a purpose, and that's God's place where he's going to present himself to dwell there. Thither shall ye bring all that I command you of your burnt offerings and your sacrifices, your tithes, your heave offerings of your hand, and all your choice vows which ye vow unto the Lord. You're going to transact all your business in that place with God. It's the place to exercise the business in the place that I choose. And again in verse 14, but in the place which the Lord shall choose in one of thy tribes, there thou shalt offer thy burnt offerings, and there thou shalt do all that I command thee. So God has a specific place, and he says it over and over again. Remember, if you don't go back to Exodus, in Exodus 25, etc., God said, I want you to, I'm going to have you build a tabernacle, a tent, and in the tent will be the place, the tent will be where I will be, the Shekinah glory, and I will be there. And that is a meeting place. The tabernacle was the meeting place for all Israel to realize God's presence and to understand God was there to, in his great name, to bless them. And they were to understand God's wonderful personal presence in the very midst of all 12 tribes in the center of them. Now, over if you would please, in the light of that, remember, tabernacle went from to Shiloh and then to Jerusalem. And you would remember, without turning there, in Revelation 21 and 22, that God is going to present a new heaven, a new earth, and a new Jerusalem, the place that I choose. Jerusalem, and that's Deuteronomy that you're reading, is the city, God's city for God's place of his, where he's going to be worshipped in the temple. And thus you have a Jerusalem. Jerusalem is the place, no question about it. Now, and that's where God is going to be worshipped and honored. That's where people can understand God in by way of the tabernacle, by way of the temple. They will be able to transact business with the infinite, invisible God. So now, having said that, the God who rules and reigns. Over, if you would please, to Ezekiel. And Ezekiel chapter 48. In Ezekiel chapter 48. Now, if you remember God's name, God says, I have a place where my name is. Wherever my name is, if you honor me where my name is, I will bless you. That's pretty clear. Where I am, I'll bless you. Now, in Ezekiel, in the last chapter 40 to 48, it's all about the temple in the millennium. When Christ is reigning, they're going to have the rebuild the temple. Temple of the Antichrist will go down, and the temple of God will go up. And thus, in the process of that, here's chapters 40 to 48 dealing with it. When you come, as you're coming down chapter 48, and you come to the end of Ezekiel, how does Ezekiel end? Now remember, we'll pick it up in a moment. First, 48, verse 35. It was round about 18,000 measures, and the name of the city, from that day, when they build that place, in the temple, Millennial Temple, when they build that, the name of that city will be called, the Lord is there. There is no verb. The Lord, Jehovah Shema, there, little adverb, adjective, there, T-H-E, there, where, there, what place, there, there, that place, there, that place. Now, hang on to that because it's very specific. And God has told them all the way down the corridor of time what he's going to do, that God would bless where his name was. And thus, the people of Israel, here they are in captivity, if you would. And in the place of being in captivity, God makes a promise, a pledge to remind them that God is going to go and fulfill his great saving grace, his redemptive purpose. And God's going to go and do all of that by way of the temple, by way of the city of Jerusalem. He's going to do that for what purpose? That the whole world, all people on planet Earth, all nations on planet Earth, will be able to fulfill his wonderful plan, that all human beings would enjoy and appreciate his person. That's the purpose. To enjoy God. You know, what's the highest end? What's God's purpose? That we enjoy God. That's the purpose. Now, thus having said that, so now looking at Ezekiel 48, verse 35. Now, if you were, you have to remember that in Ezekiel, you're writing in Ezekiel 48, and probably 14 years have gone by since Jerusalem was knocked down, temples down, no temple, no city, and time has gone on, and there they are. So here we are, we have there's no Israel in the land. The Assyrians took the 10 tribes in the north, the Babylonians, Nebuchadnezzar, took the 2 tribes in the south. And Jerusalem, you look, it's just rubble, ruins. So here we are looking at that, and if you were an Israelite, a Jew, in the land of in the Babylonian captivity during that time, would you be encouraged, as Ezekiel goes through all of the magnificent truth that God uses him to present, and then he closes with a simple statement, and that city, in that city, when that city is built and rightly occupied, the name of that city is Jehovah Shema, Jehovah is there. The Lord is there. There. There is the Lord in that place. That's right. Wherever I am, I will bless you. Honor me where I am, and I will bless you. Now, hang on to that. So I'm looking at that and asking myself, if I was an Israelite, would I be all excited that there's a great future, a great hope, and even though I don't see it at the moment, it's a wonderful time. A wonderful time is ahead. And it may not be for me, but it would be for my children in a worldly sense, earthly sense. Now, over if you would, keeping that thought in front of you, over to Psalm 137. And in Psalm 137, what do you have? Well, you have a Israelite, probably a Levite, and he's in the land. That, remember, they were after 70 years. Some of them were sent back. Most of them didn't go back. They stayed in Babylon. And so here he is, and he's writing, looking back, looking at. If you look out, coming in, Ezra, Nehemiah. There's ruins, nothing. You got to take the ruins and make them work. You got to take them, make them work. And then you look back at all the rest of the people that could have left with us. They all stayed in Babylon. They didn't want to go back to. They had a great home, a job, a retirement, just like our government. Wonderful. All set up. They didn't want to leave. And so looking at the rubble, looking at that, and then looking around you, and here's the enemy all around you, and they hope you fail, don't want you to succeed. Psalm 137 then. By the rivers of Babylon, There we sat down, yea, we wept when we remembered Zion. Looking back, we sat down and we thought about Jerusalem, the city. We hanged our harps upon the willows in the midst thereof. For there they that carried us away captive required of us a song, and they that wasted us required of us mirth, and to be happy in singing, saying, sing us one of the songs of Zion. Zion's a wonderful place. All the songs were to be delightful and uplifting and majestic and full of mercy. And sing us one of... We don't have songs like that. We don't have songs like that. We get all kinds of songs and music, but not like that. Now, verse 4. How shall we sing the Lord's song in a strange land? How can we be in Babylon? How can we be out of Jerusalem with the temple down? How can we possibly sing where his name isn't? Where we shouldn't be here, we're only here because of our unbelief. We're in Babylon as captives. Now, you want us to sing, and we don't have anything to sing about. Our song requires God, and we have failed God, and God has disciplined us in the land of Babylon. So we don't have anything to sing. We don't have anything to say. We'll have to join whatever's going on in our world and try to find happiness as they do. Therefore, verse 5, but you know that that's their thinking, the believer's thinking. If I forget thee, verse 5, O Jerusalem, let my right hand forget her cunning so I can't play. If I do not remember thee, let my tongue cleave to the roof of my mouth so I can't sing. I don't want to play and I don't want to sing. And I have no right to sing and play out of the will of God. Thus, verse 6, the middle, if I prefer not Jerusalem above my chief joy, the basis for my singing, the basis for my excitement is that there's a great God who helps me get through the thick and thin of being alive on planet Earth. And when Israel loses Jerusalem and loses the temple, they lose the practical, personal relationship to God that blessed them. And they all happened because they didn't believe God. Now, they've been in Babylon, and they come back. Over to Psalm 115. Psalm 115. In Psalm 115... Remember now, we're looking there, and where's our song? Now, what are you going to do? What do you understand as a believer? 115, verse 1. Not unto us, O Lord, not unto us, but upon thy name, but unto thy name give glory for thy mercy and for thy truth's sake. That's why to do it. Honor your wonderful person and presence. Honor your name. Wherefore should the heathen, the nations, Babylon, Assyria, and everybody else, wherefore should the heathen say, where is now their God? Sing us a song. Well, we aren't in the place of God. And so, therefore, without God, we don't have that kind of wholehearted, wonderful security, safety, and serenity. We don't have that. So now, thus, where is now their God? And they cry out, because did they learn something from Babylon? Absolutely. But in the world says, where's your God? You got a God? Not a church. You go, where do you go to church? So you can say that. I go to church here, I go to church there. But the question is, where? What about God? See, I'll go to buildings, I'll go to churches, have services. But the whole purpose of it is to get to God, for God to get to us. And all the systems are out there, religions are out there of all kinds. and they all do what they do, but they aren't going to get to God. The Buddhists aren't going to get to God. The Hindu, the Shinto, all of these, Confucianism. Are we going to get to God? In our own country, we have all of our services and so many things, but we don't get to God. We don't get to God. Where's God? Well, we never have God. We don't even think about God. We have our services. We do what we do. And we fulfill, deep down in our gut, we're fulfilling our obligation to God as we understand it. Down in our gut. Now, we aren't going to do that. You have to go down inside of us and down past the inner ego and id and all that. Down inside, what we're really doing. That's what we're doing. So we're content. We're able to be what we are. And God is whoever he is and wherever he is. We're giving him credit as opposed to worshiping a totem pole or something else. We're giving God credit. Now, having said all that, they said, verse 3, but our God is in the heavens. He hath done whatsoever he hath pleased. Now, Israel, you learned a wonderful lesson in Babylon. It's true. It's true. It cost you the temple, the city. It cost you great heartache, no question. But you learned something. Our God is in the heavens. He doth whatsoever he pleases. And by the way, you'll note, please, if I can, in verse 4, when it comes to idolatry, as a nation, we are all done with idolatry. Babylon essentially cured us of being idolatrous. We may be unbelieving, but we don't get into idolatry. It cured. Don't do it. That's why they're out. Why are they like that? Because they aren't going to get into idols. They may get, like all of us, caught up in something. But generally, Judaism is not into idolatry, as we would see it in the light of history. So here, and you read it, verse 4, their idols are silver and gold, the work of men's hands, skipping, reading all about, can't do anything. Verse 8, they that make them are like unto them, so is everyone that trusts in them. So we make our own idols. That's how where did idols come from? We made them. Where does religion come from? We made it. We make the religion. We exercise the religion. We're happy with the religion. We adjust the religion as needed. And that's what we do. Now, having said that, then we're done. That's right. And as you keep reading, which we won't, verse 9, O Israel, trust thou in the Lord. He is their help and their shield. O house of Aaron, trust in the Lord, for he is their help and shield. And that's where we all come in. Ye that fear the Lord, trust in the Lord. He is their help and shield. And so Israel is a remnant back in the land. And they understand that all the stuff that the world would like to see, a glorious Israel, but there isn't a glorious Israel. It's a little band of people putting up a temple that is no match for Solomon's temple. They have a city. It is no match for the great, wonderful buildings of Solomon in Solomon's day. Nothing to it. Looks like a junky old place. Now, having said that, and what are they going to do in that place? Over in Nehemiah chapter 8. Nehemiah and chapter 8. And remember, God raises up Ezra that goes to Jerusalem, Nehemiah that goes to Jerusalem. God raises up Haggai, the prophet, and Zechariah, the prophet. And they minister. All these four people are the centerpieces in what they do in the people that go back to build the temple. And it isn't very much, but they aren't going back to idolatry. No, not that. No, not that one. That didn't pay. God, we made a big mistake when we went and left you. So we aren't going to do that again. Not so easy. Over to Nehemiah chapter 8. And remember, there is to be a wonderful appreciation to be in the city Jerusalem. That's where they are. Ezra, Nehemiah, and a handful of Jews are in the city. They're going to take, you know, Ezra and that. They're going to take the rubbish, the burnt bricks and wood, and they're going to go and build. They're going to fix it, clean it up, and build the temple. They're going to build the walls. It's nothing like what it used to be, but you know they're in the right place where God wants them to be. It's God's city. The temple isn't anything like Solomon's or like the millennial temple, Ezekiel 48. But it's a temple. It's in the right place, in the right city, and God knows that. It doesn't have the stuff in it that it did in the days of Moses, but that's all right. That's all right. You've got what you've got, and God is going to bless that. God is going to bless that place. And so the Israelites, are you encouraged, O little band? Yes. Nehemiah chapter 8. And picking up in verse 1. And all the people gathered themselves together as one man into the street that was before the water gate. And they spake unto Ezra the scribe to bring the book of the law of Moses, which the Lord had commanded to Israel. Verse 3. And Ezra the priest brought the law before the congregation, both men and women, and all that could hear with understanding, upon the first day of the seventh month. Verse 3. And he read therein before the street that was before the water gate, from the morning until midday, before the men and the women, and those that could understand. And the ears of all the people were attentive unto the book of the law. They spent all morning listening to the reading of the five books of Moses, listening to them. They haven't had it. And they're reading now. And you know from the subject over Nehemiah chapter 8, going if I can, and in verse 8 and 8, so they read in the book, in the law of God, distinctly, gave the sense, and caused them to understand the reading. So what are we supposed to do? What did they do? What do we do to preach the word and all that stuff? God help us in doing it. We're to make it distinct, clear, plain, able to take, put your hand in it, and walk out the door with the truth. The word. And they gave it that way. It isn't often given that way, but that's how it's supposed to be, because we're obligated. What is the word going to do? They're listening. And picking up, if I can, verse 10. Then he said unto them, go your way, and eat the fat, and drink the sweet, and send portions unto them for whom nothing is prepared. For this day is holy unto the Lord, unto our Lord. Neither be sorry, don't be sorry, for the joy of the Lord is your strength. Don't be looking around at what you have and trying to compare it. Would you just be glad you're in the right place where God said to be, and God's there. No matter how barren, no matter how empty of anything, God's there. God's there. That's the key. It isn't what material's there. It isn't what the conditions are in school, work, home, play, physically, financially. It isn't that. No, it's where God is. And all of those things, if we bring them in, we should put them at the foot of the cross, as it were. God, here we are in our condition, burnt bricks, the temple's down, the city's down, the enemies are all around us. God, here we are. We're to do it with joy. Joy, God, in the right place. Now, picking up, if I can, in verse 11. So the Levites stilled all the people, hold your peace, for the day is holy, neither ye be grieved. Don't be down in the mouth and say, woe is me. Don't do that. You're in the right place, doing the right thing. Don't do that. Don't lose the joy, and don't be saddened and grieved, etc. And verse 12, and all the people went their way to eat and to drink, have lunch, and to send portions, and to make great mirth, and they practiced it, because they had understood the words that were declared unto them. And on the second day were gathered together the chief of the fathers of all the people, the priests, the Levites, unto Ezra the scribe, even to understand the words of the law. And they're doing it all over again, all over again, all over again. Verse 17, and all the congregation of them that were come together out of the captivity made booths. Remember the Feast of Tabernacles. It was the right time in September, October. Right time for the Feast of Tabernacles, and they're reading about them. Leviticus 23, etc. Feast of Tabernacles. It's the time. It's the time of year. Watch. And they made, they set, and they, and I'll start again. And all the congregation of the of them that were come together out of the captivity made booths, little tents, huts, and set under the booths, which they were to do. For since the days of Joshua, the son of Nun, unto that day had not the children of Israel done so. And there was very great gladness. They hadn't celebrated the Feast of Tabernacles since Joshua. How's that? All the way through the kings, they never did. Never did it. Now, and they were glad. They were glad, not sad. They were glad. They were in the right place. God was helping them, encouraging them. Over, if you would, Zechariah chapter 14. Zechariah and chapter 14. And you would remember, Zechariah is living, Ezra, Nehemiah, Ezra, Zechariah. And God, you're going to encourage their heart, that's right. Ezekiel is going to encourage their heart, telling them there's a city, and the city, because God is there, is going to be named Jehovah Shema. The Lord Jehovah is there. Jehovah is there. Where? Where is he? He's in Jerusalem. Where is he? He's there. Zechariah chapter 14, verse 20. In that day, in the millennium, in the city of Jerusalem, in that day, 14 and 20, in that day there shall be upon the bells of the horses holiness unto the Lord, and the pots in the Lord's house shall be like the bowls before the altar, all sacred. Yea, every pot in Jerusalem, the pot on your stove and the pot on your stove, they're all holy. Every utensil in Jerusalem is set upon. God said, where my name is, I will bless you. Now watch. Verse 21. Yea, every pot in Jerusalem and in Judah shall be holiness unto the Lord of hosts. And they all, and all they that sacrifice shall come and take of them, and seethe boil therein. And in that day there shall be no more the Canaanite in the house of the Lord of hosts. So God, it's a wonderful time coming up when that city is in my name, taken my name. I'm there in that place. That's where I am. Now, having said that and keeping that in mind, go over with me, please, to get a little more background to where it is coming from. Over, if you would please, to Exodus. Exodus chapter 3. And in Exodus chapter 3, picking up if I can, you know, God met with Moses. Moses is 80 years old. and God meets with him. Moses has been going around up there on the backside of the desert for 40 years. And God just watched him go every day and take his handful of sheep and do what he did. Faithfully, he did them, like David. And he did them. Well, the time had come, and Moses is 80 years old, and he goes by the same trail that he did for how many times unknown up there in Mount Sinai. And thus, you know, God dealt with Moses. And you'll please note, if I may, the burning bush. And I may pick up, please, verse 2. And the angel of the Lord, the pre-incarnate Christ, appeared unto him in a flame of fire out of the midst of the bush. And he looked, and behold, the bush burned with fire, and the bush was not consumed. God, as you know, Stephen in Acts is going to say it wonderfully, God was in the bush. When God's in the bush is certainly safe. Certainly safe. The all-consuming God is in the bush, but the bush is just a bush. But the bush becomes a very special bush because God is there. Wherever I put my name, blessed, holy, holy pots, holy dishes, holy spoons, everywhere. Watch. And verse 3. And Moses said, I will now turn aside and see this great sight, why the bush is not burnt. And when the Lord saw that he turned aside to see, God called him out of the midst of the bush and said, Moses, Moses. And he said, Here am I. And he said, Draw nigh, draw not nigh thither, put off thy shoes from off thy feet, for the place whereon thou standest is what? Holy ground. Why is it holy ground? You've been across it how many times with your shoes on? But this time, God's there. And it makes all the difference. All the difference when God is there. Everything changes. When I put my name in that city, the city changes. The city changes. Ah. Now, God, and so, holy ground. Verse 6, moreover, he said, I am the God of thy father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, the God of Jacob. And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look upon God. Verse 14, and God said, My name. So Moses wanted to have his name. And God said unto Moses, I am that I am. And he said, Thou shalt say unto the children of Israel, I am hath sent me. Now that's the starting point. God introducing himself to Moses. I am the God of Abraham, Isaac, Jacob. And when I go, and you go to Israel, Moses, you're going to say, I am, has sent me. And that's what you're going to say. That's my name. We started with that. That's your name. Now, I'm going to develop that name wonderfully for the people that would be in the place to understand it. Thus, over if you would, in chapter 23, Exodus 23. In Exodus chapter 23, picking up if I can, directly if I can, verse 20. Following, the angel of the Lord, the pre-incarnate Christ, he's going to deal with him. Behold, 23:20. Behold, I send an angel, pre-incarnate Christ, before thee, to keep thee in the way, and to bring thee into the place which I have prepared. And you go to the place that I prepared, my name will be there, and you'll be blessed, because I'm there. Now, so here's that, you're going to do that. Chapter 32. That's a wonderful thing they had to start with. But they didn't do well. And they went and made a golden calf, and the whole thing got loused up. The whole arrangement got loused up. Now, so here we are in the middle of the wilderness, as it were, and God, without you, we're certainly dead in this place, with no water, no food, the heat of the day and the cool of night, we'll all die. God, they made a calf, they left, they goofed. God was there, But they went and substituted something and someone else, if you would, using idolatry, something and someone else in place of God. God was there, and then we looked at Goliath. We looked at all the different things in life that get us sidetracked, and we lose it. We lose it. We lose God. Now, Exodus 32, verse 34. Now, therefore, go, lead the people unto the place of which I have spoken unto thee. Behold, mine angel shall go before thee. Nevertheless, in the day when I visit, I will visit their sin upon them. And the Lord plagued the people because they made the calf which Aaron made. They made the calf which Aaron made. They were associated, they were guilty, they were in cahoots to make a calf, a golden calf like in Egypt, a god that is no god at all. And remember, Babylon taught the people, don't make things out of gold and silver. Don't get tied up in idolatry. Idolatry is deadly in its effect. Now, so now, I'm going to go, and God's punishing them. Chapter 33, and in verse 1. And in chapter 33, and the Lord said unto Moses, depart and go up thence, thou and the people which thou hast brought up out of the land of Egypt, unto the land which I swear unto Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, saying, unto thy seed will I give it. Go to the land. And I will send an angel before thee, and I will drive out the Canaanite, the Amorite, the Hittite, the Perizzite, the Hivite, and the Jebusite, unto a land flowing with milk and honey. For I will not go up in the midst of thee, for thou art a stiff-necked people, lest I consume thee in the way. I'm going to send an angel, a regular old angel, to do the job. I was personally doing it. I can't do it. You're so stiff-necked. God backed off and said, I'm going to send you there still, but you're going to have a different leader. An angel, an ordinary, wonderful angel to bring you into the land. Now, so having said that, a land flowing with milk and honey. Thus, if I can, verse 11. And the Lord spake unto, remember now, and that God isn't going to go. And if we read a little more of the context, the people don't want to go. The people don't want to go without God. I'll go back there and show you. In verse 4, 33, verse 4. And when the people heard these bad, evil tidings, they mourned, and no man did put on him his garment, his ornaments. It was a sad time. It was a sad time. God isn't going to go with us. No. Chapter 33, verse 11. So Moses, you know, and the Lord spake unto Moses face to face, person to person, as a man speaketh unto his friend. And he turned again into the camp, but his servant Joshua, the son of Nun, a young man, departed not out of the tabernacle that was not, isn't a built one yet, it's just the tent. And Moses said unto the Lord, see thou sayest unto me, bring up this people, and thou hast not let me know whom thou wilt send with me. Now you've been going, but you're going to send somebody else. And you don't tell me who. Yet thou hast said, I know thee by name, Moses, and thou hast found grace in thy sight. And God was gracious to Moses. Now therefore, Moses said, I pray thee, if I have found grace in thy sight, show me now thy way. Why? That I may know thee. You don't want to know it for power, privilege. No, I just want to know. God, I need to understand. Like Job, I need to understand you, God. Whatever you're doing, that's all I want to do. I don't want to argue with you, debate with you, dialogue with you. I just want to know you and what you do, because your ways and your thoughts are what? Higher than the heavens. So God, and I couldn't dream of a thousand zillion things that you could do, I couldn't even come up with two or three of them. And therefore, God, you're going to have to pick the way that you choose to do whatever. Therefore, I'll read verse 13 in the middle. Show me now thy way, that I may know thee, that I may find grace in thy sight, and consider that this nation is thy people, God, your name's on the line. And he said, my presence, God said, shall go with thee, and I will give thee rest. Moses said, I don't want to go without you. And Moses said, that's a very good. I hope you understand that, Moses. No one replaces God. Nothing. Not an angel replaces God. No one replaces God. And therefore, my presence will go with you. But the city is going to be, I'm there, my personal presence in that temple, in that city. And the whole world is going to be blessed because I'm there and Israel is there honoring me. The whole world is going to be blessed. Wow. That's right. That's why you pray for the peace of Jerusalem. Until that comes, there's no way earth is going to... Believers belong to the body and should look to the Lord. But for the nations of the world, without Israel, in Jerusalem, there is none. Now, so having said that, verse 50. And he said unto him, if thy presence, Moses said, go not with me, carry us not up thence. God, I don't want to go without you. Isn't that good? And you want to learn to say that. God, I don't want to move without you. I don't want to do it without you. And you learn to stick to it. Just like Jacob, remember, he said to the pre-incarnate Christ, I will, remember in the wrestling, because he's going to lose. God dislocated his hip. I will not let you go except what? You bless me. God, I don't want to go. God, I'm not going anywhere unless you're there. Isn't that good? If I just got that. Do you know what the marvel that is? God, I don't want to go without you. I don't want to go out the door without you. Now, I don't want to go to work, school, home, play, and the hospital without you. So now, verse 16. For wherein shall it be known here that I and my people have found grace in thy sight? How is that going to be demonstrated? Is it not in that thou goest with us, and it takes your grace and mercy for you to be found with us. And if you're with us, God, we are being graced. We're being blessed, God, if you're there. So here we are, Israel's moving through the land and seeking to get where they need to be in a most wonderful way. Now, I knew before I could get to the subject we're on. I'm trying to get you into there so you can see it. It's a wonderful subject, but we have to stop. Don't look. It's close. Have to stop. So, but we'll get, what do we know? Well, here we are, God, wherever your name is. Would you go over with me, please, to Matthew? Matthew, chapter 28, you know. And God does something wonderful for the believing believer in the church age. And in this case, it will stand out a little more to us. Matthew chapter 28, if I may, in verse 19. Go ye therefore, what's our commission? Go therefore and teach all nations, baptizing, immersing them, identifying them like the, remember the water, and we take the tissue and the in the red water and a white tissue in the red water when it goes in, and it's baptized. When you lift the tissue out, it's no more white, but red. It's been baptized. God, what are you doing? I'm going to baptize them, place them into what? Verse 19, baptizing them in the name singular of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Ghost. Baptizing them in my name. I want them. You have another verse, you know, closing. Colossians 1:27. Christ in you, the hope of glory. Where's his name? Where's his name? Wherever my name is, I will bless you. Are we understanding that? Understanding that. You know, you do it. We're praying. I'm going to pray and learn to pray as a body, so we're amening the truths of God. And you know, John 14, you don't have to turn there. If 13, etc. If you ask anything in what? Anything in my name, I'll do it. In my name. I'm privileged. You're privileged to be occupied in the middle of his name. And thus, like in the middle of the tabernacle, in the middle of the temple, in the middle of Christ, in the middle of you, you, believing heart, are a new creature in Christ, in the middle of God. How are you going to get more into his name than that? Israel, coming up, my name. I'm going to put my name in that city so that all the world will realize when they see, they'll come there, and when they honor me there, because that's where I put my name, I will bless them. God, what have you done for us? You put us into the lovely person of Jesus Christ, into your name, and we are to be blessed. In fact, we just read it on Sunday of that, Ephesians 1:3. You're blessed with how many spiritual blessings? In heavenly places. You already got them. You already got them. Say, we've got to have it. No, you're done got them. You done got them. It's stupidity that we don't utilize the relationship to get the benefits. In his name. And thou shalt call that city Jehovah Shammah. I am there. And when I am there, all is well. When I'm here, that's why we're to be counted. I'm trying to think, John 15, 10, 11. Count it all joy. Now that's James 1, I know 3. But in John 15, 10, 11. My joy I give unto you. I give that joy so that your joy can be full. I gave it to you. See? But look at the conditions. God didn't ask you to look at the conditions. God didn't ask you to do anything by the conditions. It didn't make any difference about the conditions. In our country, the world, in your life, in your home, work, school, health, wealth. God, we got them. And then we've got you. And God, you make all the difference. If you're there, there is no problem. Because you don't have any problems. And as we said, if you don't have any problems, God, then certainly I can't have any problems. Because if you don't have any problems, I'm not going to have any problems. Because you don't. True. So you're all problemless, right? If you practice it. So, we'll pray. Appreciate your patience. I went over. Look to God and thank God for his wonderful.